This is a hard thing to talk about in 15 minutes. It's going to go a little fast. Sorry about that. The time they gave us.
What I've got is a tale of two fires with very similar evidence and very different outcomes. Yeah. What we had as evidence of arson in both of these cases was low burning, multiple origins, and poor patterns. This is all things that fire investigators can determine by visual observation, or they think they can. The case I want to talk about first is Ernest Ray Willis, and he was sort of the control case when I was approached first by Maury Posley and then by Barry Scheck to look at these two cases. Willis was the guy who the system worked, finally, after 18 years. I love it when they say the system worked. He's tried in, the fire was in 86. He's tried and sentenced to die in 87. In 2000, I don't know why it took him 14 years to learn, but the judge learned that Willis had been drugged throughout his trial. He had back pain, and they gave him this antipsychotic medication. He was totally unable to help with his defense during the trial. He just sort of sat there impassively. And so in closing arguments, the DA said, look at this remorseless killer just sitting here impassively. They also, there was this no future dangerousness report that somehow didn't find its way into the defense's hands. Now, the trial judge actually recommended that the sentence be overturned, and that doesn't happen very often. But that doesn't cut a lot of ice in Texas. It went to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, also known as the Texas Court of Criminal Affirmation, and they said, nah, kill a guy. Fortunately, there's the federal courts, and the judge in West Texas overturned the conviction, and they gave the state 3 months to retry him. And the DA, Ori White, was concerned about it. He asked Dr. Hirst to review it, and Dr. Hirst said, this is a crock. And so the DA let him go. And Willis was freed on October 6th with $100 and 10 days' worth of medication. But Texas, in some ways a backward state, in some ways very forward-thinking, has one of the most generous exoneration compensation programs in the country. And so Willis is now collecting about $80,000 a year. And after 17 years on death row, he was a happy man. Well, sometimes it doesn't work out that way. And Cameron Todd Willingham was a guy that was not the lucky one. Fire was in December of 91. He was sentenced to die a year later, exhausted all his appeals. The governor had a report from Dr. Hirst, which he chose not to read. Now, remember in the Willis case, it was the prosecutor who actually read Dr. Hirst's report. Willingham was executed on February 17, 2004. I first heard about the case when Maury Posley, the crime reporter for the Chicago Tribune, called, asked me to look at it and gave me the 20 indicators, gave me the transcript from the trial, and I was pretty troubled by what had happened. I was later asked by Barry Scheck to head up a committee to review the work, and I corralled three experts and a lawyer to help me with that work, and we reviewed all of the expert testimony, all of the photographs, the videotapes, and concluded that it was a crock. We submitted our report to the Texas Forensic Science Commission in May of 06. In August of 08, after they were created in 05, but in a very clever way of getting around their obligations, the legislature didn't fund them. So they couldn't actually meet. They existed. And the first set of commissions actually expired before they got to meet. So they decided in August of 08, 2.5 years after our report, to investigate. In December of 08, they hired Dr. Craig Beiler, one of the top guys on the planet in fire science. And his report came out August 25, 09, about a week before David's article, Trial by Fire, came out. They were, the Forensic Science Commission was scheduled to hear testimony from Dr. Beiler on October 2nd, but on September 30 of 09, the governor dismissed three members of the Forensic Science Commission, just routine, don't you know, wasn't a cover-up or anything. It resonated. There were editorials in the New York Times and the LA Times and Chicago Tribune. It got real, got a lot of publicity. I think Governor Perry was hoping things would quiet down, but it made it very loud for a while. But it has since disappeared into sort of a political wasteland. But that's politics. I want to talk about the science. And the first thing I want to do is give you guys a primer on compartment fires. These are fires indoors. Everybody thinks they know something about fires. Everybody knows about convection. Heat rises. It's way more complicated than that. Fire dynamics rule number one, fires behave differently when they're inside structures. Rule number two, heat rises, but only until it gets to the ceiling. It's going to stop there. Yeah, it sounds funny, but you would be amazed at the number of fire investigators that get on the witness stand and they talk about this V pattern, how heat rises up. And if it burns the floor well, they must have had help. Rule number three, once a room becomes fully involved, accurate visual interpretation of post-fire artifacts becomes difficult, if not impossible. Now, we've known this for some time, since the mid-80s, but this is fire scientists and fire engineers who didn't talk a lot to fire investigators, and they are different communities. As David mentioned, they're mostly just high school graduates. They're making complicated decisions about chemistry and physics, and they haven't had any chemistry or physics since high school. But this is a sketch of how fire progresses. This is called the free-burning stage. Looks like a regular fire. The heat rises, makes a V-shaped pattern, but it forms a gas layer at the ceiling. And as the fire burns, that gas layer gets thicker, and it gets hotter. So you're putting both smoke, mass, and energy into that hot gas layer. Now what do you know? It's a big black body at the ceiling. It radiates in every direction, including down. And so at this point, you've got heat coming downward. And then flashover occurs. When the temperature of that hot gas layer reaches about 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit, or when the heat flux on the floor gets to about 20 kilowatts per square meter, everything, every exposed surface in the room ignites. And you can get burning underneath chairs. You can get more burning underneath than on top because it's closer to the carpet. And I know these sketches have been just fascinating for you. This is a video that every juror, every judge, everyone involved in a fire litigation should see.
This chair is stuffed with plastic foam. It has the fuel potential of 50,000 candles. And no mechanism to control the release. The steady heat of a cigarette accidentally dropped between the cushions can create a disaster. Initially, the burning cigarette creates a smoldering fire, which breaks down the foam stuffing into vaporous fuel. When there's enough heat and oxygen, it starts to flame. More heat produces more fuel, and the fire accelerates rapidly. Smoke and other products of the fire, including unburnt fuel, collect beneath the ceiling. Within 3 minutes, the temperature at the ceiling reaches 1,000 degrees, heating the contents of the entire room near the point of ignition. Carpet and other furnishings start to break down into vaporous fuels. Then, within seconds, in a process called flashover, everything in the room erupts into flame. No life survives flashover. After all the oxygen in the room is consumed, a pulsing backdraft sucks in air from the outside, depletes it in a surge of burning, then breathes in more. All this took place in less than 4 minutes and started with a smoldering cigarette.